Welcome to Because I Want to Know, the podcast where I interview guests about their crazy unique occupations or life experiences. I'm your host, Leslie Fear. So let's get into it, shall we? Hey everyone, today I'm joined with Brooke Fisher. Guys, she had a very tragic event in her life at a very young age. So there are trigger warnings for things coming up, homicide, kidnapping, those kinds of things. So you guys, if that is something that triggers you, please maybe go to the next podcast. So without further ado, Brooke, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so happy to have you. You know, one of your videos said, listen, after you've had a tragedy, what happened with me is I just got really funny.
Exactly. I feel like my whole life, I've just become this person that, and I never even realized, like, I'll just say things out loud that are just in my mind, and then everybody around me starts laughing, and a few people, you know, will go, oh, I don't know if you should have said that, but then through time, I'm just like, oh, this gets to laugh at a few people. I'm going to keep going with it.
No, I know, and, you know, sometimes if we can't laugh at ourselves, especially in tragedy, although we have to get serious here, because I got to know everything. Tell me about, as much as you remember, about the day that your tragedy happened, because I'm not telling my listeners anything until you tell us what's going on.
Yeah. So, and I do always want to preface this whenever I talk for an interview or like whenever I was on the TV show, I was a month from being two. So I was itty bitty. Okay. I don't have actual memories of the day. It's all just what has been told to me, all of the court documents that I've read, all of the interviews that I've done over the past few years. Okay. So it's just me kind of putting this story together. Right. And it's been 25 years now since it happened. And it's a lot of, I had the general idea of it growing up, but it wasn't until I got into college, really, that I started doing my own deep dive. And I had a lot of questions that I wanted answered. Yeah. So from what we know, okay, so we'll start here. We're going to do a little family tree.
Okay.
Here's myself. I'm Brooke. Hello, it's me. And then we have my mom, Amy, and my dad, Joey. Okay. My dad was a police officer in town. He was a pastor at a local church. Mm. You know, he was a big name in town. Everybody knew him, all the good things.
Okay.
And then on my dad's side of the family, we have his mom and dad, which I call them Nana and Papaw.
Okay.
And then we have my Nana's sister. And then her name is Beverly. Beverly is married to Todd.
Okay.
They have three kids. Two daughters and then a son,
okay.
Terry Todd, who you're about to hear a lot about.
Okay.
And then we have the great grandparents, my Nana's parents and Beverly's parents. We all lived on the same road, essentially, except for my grandparents, Nana and Papaw. They had moved away at the time. But everybody else, we all lived on the same road.
Gotcha.
So at the very front of the road, we had our great grandparents' house. It was a newer house that they had built. And then a little further back, you cross over a little creek and go through some trees, and you would have our house.
Okay.
Then you had the old family house, which now is abandoned. You can't go in there. But that is the house, essentially, that my great-grandparents raised everyone in. My grandparents then started raising my dad there. It had been in the family for generations and generations. And then on the other side of the old family house was Beverly and Todd's house.
Okay.
And Terry Todd, my cousin, lived with them at the time.
Okay.
So we know that Terry Todd had some issues. He was diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
Okay.
He had had some run-ins with the law in the past.
Okay.
There was an assault on his record.
Mm.
He had beat a man with a baseball bat.
Ooh.
And he had been known to hang with not a great crowd.
Mm.
This crowd maybe had been known for using certain substances.
Mm-hmm.
And there for a while, things got a little iffy to the point where my mom started expressing to my dad that anytime, you know, he would go off to work and he worked nights a lot,
right,
that she felt very uncomfortable being in the house by herself.
Oh.
Because she just had a very uneasy feeling with Terry being so close.
Mm.
So she started staying with my Nana and Papa. She would go stay with her sisters or brothers. She would go stay with a friend. You know, she was always gone when my dad was on shift.
Okay.
And she had told a couple people that, I guess, a couple weeks, a month maybe before the whole incident had happened, she had been in the house and was looking out the back window, and out the back of the yard, it's just a line of trees. Okay. And she had said that she had saw him out in the woods, and she didn't think he was like doing anything out there. He was just standing there.
Wow.
And looking.
Okay.
And it had really, really shook her up, obviously.
Yeah.
So we're getting closer to time. He's been having some behavior issues. He hasn't been taking his meds. Mm-hmm. So that causes a lot of aggression. He had a lot of anger.
Yeah.
And I don't know what he was doing. He was out and about, and I don't know if a cop got called on him or if he just randomly saw a cop. I'm not sure. I do know that a brick was thrown at a cop's car.
Okay.
And it apparently was unprecedented.
Mm.
From this, his mother, Beverly, asked my mom if she would go with her to the courthouse to help get a mental health order for him.
Okay.
So my mom agrees. They go. The judge looks at everything. The judge also thinks, yes, this is grounds for a 72-hour hold.
Mm.
So he issues the warrant. My dad, being a police officer, says, you know, why don't I be the one who issues this? He trusts me. You know, we've grown up together. Hopefully this will just go a lot smoother if I'm the one taking him in.
Sure.
So my dad and a couple others, along with Todd, which is Terry Todd's father.
Okay.
They approach Terry to issue this mental health warrant. And Terry gets very violent. He automatically starts fighting them. He doesn't want to listen. He's trying to get away. And so they ended up having to use force to get him in the squad car to get him to the hospital.
Yikes.
So he does the 72-hour hold. At the end of it, they release him. They say that he seems, you know, he had an outburst, but he seems perfectly sane. He does not seem like a danger to himself or others.
Mm.
Go on home, take your meds, call it good.
Oh boy.
And I have now done a lot of research into the time of, like, it was in 1999.
Okay.
And at that time, especially in Kentucky, this is when a lot of prison reform was happening.
Mm.
And a lot of the prisons were releasing these inmates who were more, you know, mentally ill.
Yeah.
But had just been put in prison to have somewhere to go. They started releasing all of these inmates, and they're transporting them to these mental hospitals.
Wow.
The mental hospitals at the time are getting overrun. They don't have room for even the 72-hour hold patients. And so at the time, you know, he really played them and tricked them into thinking, you know, he's good to go.
Yeah.
Or if at the time it was that they were so overwhelmed that they just couldn't handle it.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's a little side note on that.
Okay.
So he gets out. I believe he gets out on a Thursday.
Okay.
We fast forward to, let's see, I believe it was Thursday or Friday night. My mom goes to visit a family friend of ours. Her name is Angie. If you watched the TV episode, or if anybody out there has watched the TV episode, she was also interviewed and told this story on the show.
What was the show, Brooke?
Oh, it was American Monster.
Oh, wow.
We were season 11, episode 4.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I wanted to let my listeners know in case they wanted to hear the full story. So we're just getting the good stuff.
Yeah. Full hour.
Yeah. Yeah. They probably have a lot of other information on it too. So keep going.
Exactly. So we hear that Angie had said that my mom had come over one of those nights, and she had told her that essentially she feels that things are so dangerous to the point with Terry. She was so scared of Terry at that point.
Wow.
She had told her friend, like, she genuinely thinks that this is the last time she's going to see her.
Oh my God.
And she like made her promise, you know, that if anything ever happened to her or my dad, that, you know, she would help take care of me and raise me and all of this stuff. And like, she was genuinely like, she knew that something bad was going to happen.
Wow. It sounds to me, Brooke, that she was trying to be proactive about this. She was trying to get people to, you know, take her seriously. She had him evaluated, all of the things that needed to be done. And it sounds like none of that really was done.
Yes, correct. Correct. It was this whole thing, which I talk about it a lot. It was a total system failure, essentially.
Yes.
So we move on, you know, a couple days later, it's Saturday. He was released on Thursday. Now it's Saturday.
Okay.
So we find out later that he actually, of course, had not been taking his meds after he was released. And on Saturday, it was a time when I think his mom was out that morning doing something in town. Him and his dad were at home.
Okay.
And he, you know, gets his dad out of the house. I don't know if it was, I've always heard it was a story of like, hey, dad, like, let's go pick up lunch for mom or something.
Okay.
To get him out of the house. And he ends up driving his dad to a cemetery where Todd's family, I think Todd's parents and maybe some other family members were buried
his
there.
His dad's parents. Okay.
Yes. So he takes them to this cemetery. I guess they get out of the car. They walk over to the graves. And Terry ends up getting a baseball bat from the car and comes back and kills his father.
My listeners know, I only know the preface of what happened with you. I never know the details until we talk. So I'm reacting probably the same way they would react. Oh, my goodness. Keep going. Oh,
yeah. So what he did is just awful. So after he does this to his father over his grandparents' grave, he picks up his body, puts him in the trunk. He drives down a little bit. There's this road, this old back road, and it has like a creek ditch thing, and then it has like a little bridge thing that you can drive over.
Okay.
And he had stopped at this bridge and tossed his body over into this creek.
Oh,
and so he goes home, and this is where I really start to think, because he eventually claims insanity, saying that he was having delusions. And here's when I'm really like, no, I don't think so, because it's very premeditated.
Yeah, you're going somewhere, and it's symbolic too, and you have a bat, and you did it. Sounds like knowing where he was going to dump the body. It seems very premeditated to me too.
So he leaves there. He goes back home. He rinses out the bed of the truck, and he waits for his mom to come home.
Oh.
So mom comes home later. Kind of the same thing. I don't really know what he says, something to the same amount of, hey, dad had to run to town, but like, let's go get him, you know, dinner or an ice cream or something for whenever he gets back. And so she, same thing, says, all right, let's go. So they hop in the car and he takes her to, I think it's the same road where that like creek runs through.
Okay.
But it was somewhere like down a few hundred yards from where his dad was dumped.
Oh my God.
He gets out of the car, walks around to the back, grabs a shotgun out of the back, walks over to her car door and shoots her point blank.
Oh.
Luckily, from what I've heard, where she was shot makes me think that she didn't see it coming, which is my only hope.
Yes. And if you didn't think he had premeditated the first one, now you know.
Yes, exactly. So he, you know, does that, and then he gets her out of the car and simply throws her down into the same creek that he had dumped his dad into.
Wow.
Same thing, goes home, cleans out the car. Well, he does it really lazily, we found out later. And we know at some point he goes to, and this all happens in Muhlenberg County, Kentucky.
Okay.
We know at some point that night he goes to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, which is about 30, 40 minutes away from Muhlenberg.
Okay.
That's where a lot of these friends that he hung out with, that's where they lived. That's where I think he lived for, you know, a couple, you know, a few years of his life. We don't know exactly who was with him what happened, what was said, all of that was redacted in the court documents. I actually had somebody that commented on one of my TikTok videos, and I really need to go find it and message them. They said that they were friends or had like a sibling that was one of his friends that was there that night. Oh, and I really need to get a hold of them.
Yes. You know, and here's another thing, Brooke. He drove 40 minutes away after killing both of his parents separately. So both times, even between his father's death and his mother's death, and now we've got the 40-minute drive, he's had time to cool off. And that doesn't seem to be going on here.
So we don't know exactly what happened. We don't know if he told them what happened. You know, I'm not for sure. Okay. We know he comes back early, early morning, back to his house.
Okay.
So now it's going into Sunday morning. My dad, like I said earlier, he was also a preacher at our local church.
Okay.
But apparently that night I had been throwing up a lot. I was very sick. And so there wasn't a normal doctor open on a Sunday. So they were going to load me up and take me to the ER to get checked out before church that morning.
Okay.
It was around 6 a.m., I think they said. It was super, super early. And as they were walking out and loading me into the car, my dad gets shot. And so they figured out that Terry was in his kitchen window with a shotgun. And that's the first shot for my dad was from there.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I believe it killed him instantly. It was in the head. So, another one, I don't think he saw it coming.
Well, we hope not.
But then this next part just, it makes me want to cry, but it makes, now the adult woman in me just rage. After he shoots my dad, he leaves his house. And he walks over to our driveway where my mom is, frantic and holding me. And there is a struggle between the two because he is trying to take me away from her.
Oh, my God.
He does overpower her and puts me behind the car and then comes back and shoots my mom twice.
Oh, my God.
And my mom was pregnant. They were just about to find out the gender.
Oh, honey.
And luckily, one of my uncles, one of my mom's brothers, was staying with us at the time.
Okay.
And so he heard the first gunshot and then horrifically had to watch everything that happened with his sister.
Oh.
But he was able to call the police immediately.
Okay.
And he was able to relay to them, that he had taken me. He took me back into his house. And now, all the doors were shut.
So you're with Terry now. You're with your cousin. Oh, my gosh.
Terry has now taken little almost 2-year-old me away. So they said that there was no signs of injury or anything on me. He didn't hurt me at all. If anything, they said that there were signs that he figured out that I was sick and he was taking care of me, which him and his mom apparently had, they would watch me. The whole family would watch me all the time. So, he knew kind of what to do with a baby. He knew how to feed me, how to change me, all the things.
Gotcha.
And he had, taken care of me for a little while there. So after the police get there and they have the whole house surrounded, which a lot of the local department came in. And, of course, a lot of them couldn't work the case. So they had to bring in state and other jurisdictions to work on this.
Okay.
Which it's a lot of them, they always talk about how, that was one of the times where, they weren't going to go with the law necessarily that day.
Yeah, well, I understand.
So it's, probably also a good whatever thing that other jurisdictions came. So eventually after a few hours, he finally, don't know why, I guess he just got tired. He brought me out, always holding me. Apparently, anytime he would talk to them or go up to a window, he was holding me in front of him.
Oh, my God. What a piece of crap.
Yes. No, he was a coward. So he finally takes me outside, puts me down. They get me away, take him in. And now they're trying to figure out, that my parents are dead. he's home alone were his parents.
Right.
So they go in and they search the house. And this is where you really start to see that this was not a man that had a mental illness to the point. And I say mental illness as in he was claiming he was having like delusions and like he was having a psychotic episode.
Yeah.
This is where that goes out the window 100%.
Mm.
He had ammunition and weapons beside every single door and window of the house.
Oh my God.
And had more weapons stashed, I think they said, in the fireplace. And then he had, now, I am a pit bull mama. Mm. I love my pit bulls. I love them so much.
Yeah.
But he was one of the pieces of crap in the world that apparently was breeding, training, keeping pit bulls in his basement to attack. And that breaks my heart. So once they go inside and they see all of this and they see, you know, they see that this was planned. This wasn't just something that had been planned like starting yesterday. This has been planned for a long period of time. This was an angry man. And he finally, I guess, just got fed up with it whenever they got him admitted.
Mm.
This was it. So they finally take him in, interview him. And he eventually, you know, tells them where to find the bodies of his mom and his dad. They get them. They end up, they hold the funeral, all four funerals at the same time. Both of the, you know, gravesite funerals were the same day, the whole thing.
Right.
And at his sentencing, he pled insanity, but he ended up, was still guilty on four counts. Mm. So he got four life sentences, no possibility of parole.
Good.
And which my Nana, she in herself, she was a very, very strong, independent, fearless woman. She was so adamant about the fact that there was only four, you know, life sentences and not five. And so she ended up going to Frankfurt to like rally for a bill, you know, saying that if you kill a pregnant woman, that it counts as two,
right?
Not
one. I
can
understand that. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, he's in prison. He's still alive. He's going to be there for the rest of his life. But yeah, it's a crazy story. It's something that you don't think about would like happen in like a small rural Kentucky town to, you know, the town preacher at that, like just this 27-28 year old guy and his 22 year old wife with a baby and another baby on the way, just like living their life.
Yeah,
it's just insane to me.
Oh my God. Okay, so many questions. Do you happen to know what started this in the first place? He was living with his parents, so was he that angry with them? Were they, did they not get along? Do you know anything about that?
See, everything that I have heard says that, you know, they were great parents. Mm. They were super loving. They supported all of their kids. They always wanted the best for their kids. Now, I have heard through some interviews with people that they may not have always supported him in the way that we think you should.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in the times when he had been arrested before and would get charged with things, I've been told that they were always, you know, the first ones to get down there, get him bailed out, get home. Let's not talk about this.
Okay.
So a part of me, I do wonder if it had just been that there was a lot more that had happened in his life that we didn't know about, kind of thing, because they were very just, let's not talk about this ever again.
Yes. Sometimes, you know, when you bail people out and you bail people out, you're almost aiding in their mental illness.
You are
aiding it. Yeah. And let's be honest, you've got to have a little bit of mental illness if you're going to even think about doing something like that to any relative, you know. So I don't deny that he probably obviously has bipolar, but that's not an excuse to go murder four people. And, you know, who knows what he could have done to you had he gotten more desperate. Okay, so let me ask you this. Have you spoken or seen him since then?
I have not, not for a lack of trying.
Really?
Okay. So in college, especially, I went to college and got my bachelor's and master's in social work.
Okay.
And I really was going with the interest of, you know, mental health and mental disorders and learning all about them.
Yes.
And during school, at one of my internships, they, you know, kind of really helped process a lot of things going into adulthood. And they, you know, allowed a lot of like resources. They helped with a lot of resources to get me in contact with people who could find him and get in contact with him, okay, or the people that I would need to talk to.
Okay.
And so I ended up getting the contact information for his caseworker and his therapist there.
Okay.
And both of them, after talking with them, and at the time also, at the time I was not privy to a lot of the knowledge that I am now.
Okay.
And so at the time I was still very much, I was still trying to learn more about it, but I was still thinking that the other people in my family, on his side of the family especially, they had essentially just convinced me growing up that it was just this mental illness and that wasn't really him and that's not who he was.
Mm.
And it was just this one crazy episode and, you know, that's it. And so I went to school trying to figure out this mental illness and how this can happen that you just snap one day and do this.
Yeah.
But before I finally got to my realization that that's not in fact what he had, and he was just a premeditated coward, I wanted to reach out and essentially just tell him that, like, I'm good. I'm figuring out my life. You know, I don't know if you were hoping that you were still, like, ruining my life, but, like, you're not. I'm doing things.
Right.
But kind of in a nicer way. and both his social worker and his therapist said that they thought for the well-being of his mental health that it would be best that I not contact him.
Okay. Well, I mean, and they know maybe better than you do. They see him more often, but yeah. I can only imagine the torment this...
I know that, like, his sisters still go visit them, which I don't really have contact with them anymore.
Okay.
But they still go see him, and I know growing up, like, they would talk about, you know, what I was doing, and he even had sent me like a few like birthday cards. He sent
really?
Me like a jewelry box one time. Oh. Yeah, I definitely burned all of them. But he had reached out to me before in those instances, but we've never actually talked.
Okay.
And now especially, I don't want to.
Well, you know, I don't know what good would come from it for him anyway, because at this point, that's up to him and his maker, what's going to happen to him. So, yeah. But with you, you know, I can only imagine a 2-year-old, I'm just going to call it 2, even though you weren't quite 2, a 2-year-old child to comprehend this, because even though you were young, your soul kind of knew what was going on a little bit, I'm sure. You know, I'm all into that too. But also, there's that soul memory and that pain, and there's that connection. That's probably why for so many years he was an anomaly for you. It was just why? And I don't think anybody will ever know the answer, because like you said, he totally planned this out. He probably thought he was going to die because he already had all that ammunition. He was ready. He was either going to go out shooting or die trying, you know?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what they 100% think, that if I, for some reason, hadn't have been there and he hadn't have had me in that house, that's exactly 100% what would have happened.
Mm.
He had said, too, at one point that, like, if for some reason, like, my great-grandparents had stumbled down the road, or if my grandparents had come there that morning for some reason before the police got there, like, he was fully ready and willing to take them out too.
Do you know if he was a little awkward in school, or did he not have acceptance in places?
That's what on the TV show, I think he has an uncle that was interviewed. It may have been Todd's brother.
Okay.
So Terry's dad's brother.
Okay.
I believe he was interviewed on the show, and he had talked a bit about how he had been bullied growing up.
Mm.
He had some issues in school. He did have, and if anything, you have to watch the show just to hear the recording of his voice.
Oh, wow.
And then you understand why he got bullied in school. He did have a very, very high-pitched, more feminine-type voice. And, I mean, he was a big dude.
Oh.
I'm not sure how big he was in school, necessarily. I don't know if he was more kind of scrawny. But especially, like, I'm putting in my mind, if he was, and he had this super high-pitched voice, especially back in the, what, 70s, 80s?
Yeah.
When, I think, 80s mostly was whenever he was in school. You know, well, I can imagine how they would make fun of him back then for something like that.
Yeah.
I can definitely see a lot of that, which is probably how he got into, you know, the wrong crowd in school. He started dealing, you know, with people who did a lot of drugs.
Yeah.
I think there were some people he hung around with that had, like, you know, reports of, like, theft and, like, all this kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
There is some stuff in his past from school days that we know, like, he didn't have a great time. Maybe he didn't have that many friends. We know that he did start becoming more withdrawn, I guess, closer to, like, into high school, like, college years. Whenever he graduated high school, he started becoming a lot more quiet and to himself. I believe that's when he all of a sudden started. That's right. He was a scrawny kid because he started weightlifting and, like, powerlifting in his early 20s.
These, Brooke, these are, like, classic signs of someone who was, like you said, bullied in school. You know, and that frames you, you know, before you're 25, as you probably have heard, your brain is not completely developed. And that's just a proven fact now. And that molded him, and that was a core memory he had. And I'm not excusing anything, but I wonder if that had something to do with why he was just so volatile, especially on that one day. But there's also the bipolar, where you can have the high highs and the low lows. And maybe that was a very low low. He was off his meds. And I'm not trying to explain it away. I don't know. I wasn't there. Really, you were, but not really. You don't have a lot of memory. Do you know if he's remorseful at all?
And that's the thing. I have no idea. Like, his sisters would always tell me, you know, that he was very remorseful, but it was in the way of he's very remorseful that this happened because he doesn't know what overtook him. Okay. Like, you know, they make it almost sound like, you know, he was just, like, possessed at the time and he had no control over his body. And, like, but that wasn't really him.
Yeah, I don't buy that either. You don't put guns and plan places to dump bodies and go to a grave. And this probably took a matter of days as far as doing some of this stuff. I'm sorry. And I don't think anybody gets possessed. I think, you know, we have free will. And he obviously took his free will out on his parents, your parents, and thank goodness not you. I don't even know what, how has this affected your life? I know you lived with your grandparents after that, correct?
Yes, I lived with my dad's parents after that.
So they took this child, this baby, basically. I have a 19-month-old grandbaby myself right now. We're watching her as I speak. My husband's watching her. So I know how little you were, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, so you have no memory of any of them, right?
So it's really strange. And I've seen some therapists and psychologists about it, and they've kind of come to the same conclusion. I have no, I guess, like, active memories. Like, I can't just sit here and, like, try to think of a memory.
Right.
But I have had a lot of dreams growing up.
Okay.
To where, you know, things were very sugar-coated to me growing up, of course.
Of course. I understand.
And
that,
so, you know, I knew the basics of what happened, but I didn't know what happened.
Right.
And so I started having, like, these dreams of essentially that day. And I would explain to, like, my Nana and Papa, or, you know, whoever at the time, like, the details of this dream and, like, exactly what he did and what my parents did and where they were. And they would always just kind of look at each other and then look back at me and just be like, how do you know that?
Really? Yeah.
So some therapists and psychologists have definitely said, like, it's a possibility, you know, that it was some repressed memories, some very, very early memories that just somehow got unlocked one day. And I dream about it now. And they do happen, like, every once in a while, maybe, like, once every couple years now.
Yeah.
I'll have it pop up if it's, like, a really bad time or something. But that, I guess that is the really only, like, memory I would say I would have for myself.
Brooke, I do these podcasts. Mostly they're paranormal, as you know, you've listened to the podcast, but I do occasional true crime events, if nothing else, to spread awareness on mental health, you guys. It's been getting out of hand even today. An ex-president was shot at and he wasn't killed. And I don't want anyone to ever have to face that, regardless if I like that person or not. I don't care. No one deserves to be murdered like that or ever. So when you have someone who is mentally unstable and you see any kind of sign, or you think, just like his mother even said, I don't know what's going to happen. If something happens to me, please take care of my daughter. She kind of knew. She said something, but she really should have done something else. And honestly, had she done something else, they may have said, we can't do anything. He hasn't hurt you. And that's the problem here. So any red flag that you can do or say or raise for these kinds of situations, we maybe can help. Do you know, Brooke, since you have a master's in, what is it, social work?
Social work, yes.
Yeah. Do you have resources people can reach out to if they think maybe something like that could be going on with in their family, with their friends, with someone else they know?
Yeah. So especially if you see something, say something. Yes. Nowadays, if anything else, and it's so bad to say, but because the system itself is still sometimes broken, please still report. If anything, report what you see so it can be on a record. If you see anything, if you feel like someone is showing signs of, you know, some kind of severe mental illness where you feel like they are a danger to themselves or others, go ahead and call law enforcement. Say, you know, you believe that this is a mental health situation.
Yes.
And a lot of times, if you're, depending on where you live, they may have some mental health crisis teams there that would get you in contact with, or they can, in like this case, possibly see about getting that person, you know, some kind of mental evaluation. Because I'm sorry, they may be mad at you right now, but you could be stopping an awful situation in the future.
If nothing, oh, absolutely. And, you know, getting something on record, even if they do nothing at the time, they've got a record of, wait a minute, somebody reported whatever they reported. You know, they were violent one day, or they were doing something really crazy one day, or they think they've been doing drugs, or they're off their meds. Whatever it is, if we can stop it in its tracks beforehand, like I said, the system fails us a lot. So unfortunately, we kind of have to have each other's backs. But yeah.
Look around in your towns. If you have someone in your family that, you know, you think has a severe mental illness or has a diagnosed mental illness, look and see if there are any support groups for families of people with certain, I know like there are certain things for like families of those who have bipolar, families of those with schizophrenia. You can maybe find some kind of support group. So then that way, you know, other people that are kind of going through maybe some of the same things and seeing what they do to help with their family members. That's also
great, great suggestion, because, you know, I didn't even know that existed. It's kind of like somebody, the alcoholics people, you know, they have, is it Al-Anon for the families of the alcoholics that they can go and talk about their experiences and how it's affected them? Because it's still so devastating in any family for obviously this kind of thing, but just even the alcoholism. So Brooke, I can't thank you enough for being on my podcast and telling me your story. I'm so sorry this happened to you, but it sounds like you have done amazing. What are your plans for the future?
Oh, well, right now I am not even using my degree, but I rent out a little salon suite in Western Kentucky, and I just get to do hair all day, every day. And I get to read my little fairy books whenever I get home at night, and I'm just living the dream.
You know what? The fact that you're happy, it doesn't really matter what you do. The fact that you're happy and you're spreading awareness, you're spreading love to everyone, you make people laugh on your videos, even though such tragedy hit you and your family, that I was inspired by you, and you deserve the good recognition you're getting. I'm very proud of you.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Well, I love providing because I want to know at no cost. So if you like what you heard, please leave me a 5-star review, or you can just buy me a cup of coffee. It's kind of like a Patreon, but you don't have a monthly subscription and you can give whatever you feel led to give. I am a one-woman show and I do all of my scheduling and my interviewing and my editing. So just know your support is so greatly appreciated. And one more thing, I am a paranormal romance novelist, and you can find all of my books on Amazon. Just look up my name. I'm very easy to find. Thank you guys again, and I will see you next week.